Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
You're listening to the Book Riot Podcast. It's a weekly news and talk show about what's new, cool, and worth talking about in the world of books and reading. We're recording on Thursday, March 10th, 2022. Rebecca Shinsky is here with me. I'm Jeff O'Neill. It's springtime, Rebecca. It's cold out, but I see daffodils out my window, a little winter crocus.
Mm-hmm. We've got daffodils here. We've got some dogwood trees trying to bloom. Eastern bluebirds are back in my neighborhood, which really feels magical. Things are going to be okay.
It's we try. At the very least, it's sunnier.
It's sunnier, and the Hulu story about Elizabeth Holmes dropped last week, and that is giving me life.
You're trying to get me to listen to this. I know this is a long, whatever's happening here. Well, you explicitly said you want to talk about this. Do you mean to clear the floor? I can go to the restroom for a second if you want to talk to the people about the
dressing. I want to talk with you about it. So this is subtle pressure, not so subtle pressure here on the podcast.
I was going to say, boy, is that subtle? I hate to see
you
reverse.
Well, have you met me?
Yeah.
It is getting me through the week. The combination of Hulu doing The Dropout, starring Amanda Seyfried about Elizabeth Holmes, and I am in a more guilty pleasure entertainment way, also enjoying the Showtime series Super Pumped with Joseph Gordon-Levitt about Uber. I'm just living for this.
There's many sub-Golden Ages show title in the Golden Age of adaptations, and we're in a Golden Age of like the startup hubris story.
We are. And the Apple TV adaptation, not even adaptation, the Apple TV show about WeWork called We Crash, starring Jared Leto and Anne Hathaway, is coming out soon. And the trailers for that look bananas. And I guess there was a book about that, too. So that is book adjacent enough that I'm talking about it here, but that's been the highlight of my week.
I'll admit to a couple things. One is I'm not watching much TV right now for whatever reason. The second is I'm Holmesed out. I'm Theranos to death. I did Bad Blood. There's been the podcast. There's been a lot of things. There was the trial coverage. I'm kind of out. Maybe I'd be ready for this in like 5 years. I don't know. Mm. But I'm just like, I think I've got this, and I'm not all of them. I don't want to spend time with these people.
Yeah.
None of these people do I want to spend time with right now.
It is, at least the Holmes one is nothing. The material is not new, but I was like, how are they going to do this? Yeah. And there are these like scenes of Amanda Seyfried as Elizabeth Holmes with her headphones in, alone in the office, like early in the morning, dancing to early 2000s hip hop, where I've been like, is this real? Do we know that Elizabeth Holmes did this, or did they imagine? Like, who would have pictured Elizabeth Holmes doing this? I don't know. It's very entertaining.
At some point we could do a draft of the startup founders you least want to spend a week in the cabin with.
Oh, God.
You know, and we could pick from, you go back to Social Network, you can pick that, you can pick some Bezos, you know. Why isn't there a Musk show yet, by the way? Is it just because we like the fall in the middle of the story? Because you can all go back, and it's not the actual person, it's their fictional representation. So you've got Fassbender as Jobs, you've got Ashton Kutcher as Jobs. You can do all of these.
Oh, who would eventually play Elon Musk is a good question.
He's an unusual fella.
Yes.
Maybe we could get an Avengers-like team-up where there's Musk and Jobs and Holmes and Kalanick, and they can all ruin the world together. It's like the opposite of the Avengers.
Yeah, I got to say, the Showtime series is making me really convinced I don't want to spend any time in any place with Travis Kalanick.
But they've got a keg, Rebecca.
They have a lot of kegs. And a ping pong table. Yeah. They do. You know, the most interesting thing about it so far has been he's up late one night. He's watching a video of Jeff Bezos giving an interview online, like for inspiration. And they must not have been able to get, or maybe they didn't even try to get Bezos's permission to like air the actual interview. So there's an actor from Billions playing Jeff Bezos.
Amazing.
Yeah.
That's anyway. Maybe Jesse Plemons as Musk. I don't know.
Ooh.
I'm on Plemons is having a moment because Power of the Dog and anyway, the glow up for Plemons. All right, let's take a sponsor break and we'll get back to, you know, normal human
actual book
of
stuff.
Conversation. Yeah, all right.
Today's episode is brought to you by Entangled Publishing's Red Tower Books, publisher of the smash hit Fourth Wing. You'll only cross these blades once in a page-turning new tale of revenge, strategy, and so many lies. Best-selling Red Tower Books is releasing its next irresistible read that will capture your imagination and keep you guessing until the end. Mae Corlin's Five Broken Blades tells an intricate, high-stakes tale of five total strangers united in a plot that will test their strength, wits, and courage. Each has their reasons, all have secrets. But while it's easy to betray a stranger, it's not so simple to stab a friend or a lover, okay, in the back. Now these five blades must choose between vengeance and one another. Pick up Five Broken Blades by Mae Corlin for a thrilling, adventurous tale filled with risk, romance, adventure, and, oh, so many lies. The relationships in it are complex and nuanced and involve everything from friends to enemies, found and biological family and lovers and more. Thanks again to Entangled Publishing's Red Tower Books, publishers of the smash hit Fourth Wing, for sponsoring this episode. Today's episode is brought to you by Forever and Kennedy Ryan's heart-searing sensual This Could Be Us. When the life Soledad Barnes built with the man who was supposed to be her forever goes poof in a cloud of betrayal and disillusion, there is no time to pout or sulk or even grieve the life she lost. But then an unlikely man enters the picture. He's the forbidden one, the one she shouldn't want but can't seem to resist. Y'all know how that goes. But Soledad's lost it all before and refuses to repeat her mistakes. She asks herself, can she trust him? Can she trust herself? From the ashes of a life burned to the ground, something bold and new can rise. So This Could Be Us is an instant New York Times and USA Today bestseller. It's been featured on The Today Show and CBS Mornings. And Kennedy Ryan is the first Black romance author to hit the New York Times adult bestseller list in almost 3 years, which is amazing. Make sure to check out the new book. And thanks again to Forever and Kennedy Ryan's heart-searing sensual This Could Be Us for sponsoring this episode.
I have a listener email that made me feel terrible and great. It will make you feel great, I think, and maybe only me terrible. Would you like to hear it, Rebecca Shinsky?
All right, I'm here.
Okay. This is from Christy. I believe I have affirmative permission to use the first name. The title was Thoughts on Brandon Sanderson Equivalent. So from last week in Brandon Swagderson. I hope you all appreciated the pound sign in that I put in the title for the episode. I said I was having a hard time thinking of another Brandon Sanderson equivalent. You could go up and you can go down, but that there's like, it's kind of the habitable zone of the earth. There's like a very slim atmosphere layer where we can live and breathe. Who else would exist that for an equivalent thing? But anyway, just a second. So hi, Jeff and Rebecca. First of all, let me say thanks for being a source of joy and comfort for most of my adult life. I love listening to both of you each week and think I'm more kind, thoughtful, and intentional reader for it, exclamation point. Great, right? We feel great.
That's lovely.
Normally, I would not include this because compliments make me feel suspicious and uncomfortable, but I'm only saying that because the next thing, I don't think it'll make you feel bad. It should make me feel bad because I said, what about Colleen Hoover, that, you know, the TikTok thing? And right there was what Christy said, which is, I'm mulling over what other authors or properties could pull off what Brandon Sanderson did after listening to your latest episode about his Kickstarter campaign. When Jeff mentioned Colleen Hoover and her fan base on TikTok, it made me think of Sarah J. Maas and her fandom.
Ugh, yes.
And I was like, yes, I'm so dumb. Why didn't I think of that? Christy, well, you're totally right. That would be my draft pick. I think my number one overall draft pick.
I think
level.
You're right, Christy. Yeah. This is what we get for not really being steeped in the tea of TikTok.
Have you read that book?
No. You know how I am with bandwagons. I'll read it in a decade.
But it's been out for like 10 years. It's like saying I'm not on the bandwagon when you're like the Oregon Trail was a bandwagon.
Well,
it's like we've been here
like,
for a while.
It's not in my direct wheelhouse. No, so I wasn't going to arrive at it when it was brand new. And then now it's big. So I'm not going to get there. So I'll get there in another 10 years.
And it just hasn't burbled up like, I'm trying to think. Well, like Hunger Games.
Right.
It hasn't gotten that big. It's been a slow boil. The tide has been rising, but it hasn't really.
And
the movie does that. I guess that's the difference. The movie does that.
And I do see people in my like Instagram feed who are just, you know, normal, not book professional people posting about reading it and moving their way through the Sarah J. Maas series. So I believe that it's, you know, it's really getting out there. Speaking of our boy, Brandon Swaggerson.
Oh, yeah. Do you want to do an update?
Yeah. Uh-huh. It's at almost $27 million right now. And it's still ticking up, like, you know, every 20 seconds when the site updates. 115,000 people have backed it.
It was on the CNBC front page. I had a couple of people in my civilian life ask me about it, talk to my brother about it this weekend.
$27 million.
You know, I didn't capture the link, but I saw Sanderson was giving some quotes after the launch to somebody, Fast Company, someone. I'll try to find the link. I don't know. Maybe even for next time. We wondered what he thought the outcome was going to be. Did he have kind of a sense that it could... The answer is no, Rebecca Shinsky. Brandon Sanders Swaggerson is blown away or performing blown away convincingly, which he's passed the Turing test of being blown away show title.
You saw that 15-minute video. I believe that he's earnest here.
Yeah.
19 minutes, 15.
That's right. So, again, I think it's something, but does it turn into other somethings? That's the second question of our something for nothing game that we stole for Letterman. Are there other somethings that can go to school on this? Sarah J. Maas, I'm sure there must be an adaptation in the works for that. I'm sorry, I got stuck on The Hunger Games, but The Hunger Games felt like more an event before the movies came out even. Because didn't Mockingjay come out before the first movie did? Do you remember this order of operations?
Oh, I don't remember.
Because like that was a big deal when Mockingbird came out. Like the site was up and people were going at midnight. I don't think people were going at midnight for whatever the new Sarah J. Maas one. Were they?
Yeah, I don't think so. A Court of Thorns and Roses is in development at Hulu for a TV series.
Yeah, that doesn't tell us anything. Really?
No.
I mean,
no.
It's like if I make a real bad joke, someone from Lionsgate options it. It's like, you know, I just want to know. I just want to have it on the table.
Well, one would assume that they're paying attention to how this book is doing on TikTok and elsewhere in the culture.
It's got to be in the top five unfilmed properties, right?
Right.
At this
so.
Moment,
right now,
I can't
yeah.
even think of something that comes out on top of it. Show titles abound, but if podcast at bookriot.com, maybe we'll play this game next week. Top five, as of right now, doesn't matter if they've been optioned, just they have not appeared on screen, properties that would, you know, do some stuff online. I don't even know. Box office is not our unit anymore. Ratings, because Netflix, like, 17 million people spend less than 9 seconds watching this. Like, okay, I don't know what to do with that. But what properties are out there that we would pick? And I would even say a single book is not what I'm talking about. I don't think I'm talking about a single book.
I think you're right. No, I think you're talking about series with capital F fandom of some kind.
I can't come up with another one right now. I'm sure there are some other fantasy things. And I guess the Kingkiller Chronicle by Rothfuss, which is awaiting its last installment again. Remember that was optioned and Lin-Manuel Miranda was going to make that joint?
Right.
Remember that?
Wasn't it then? It was Rothfuss who's like... editor put out that public letter.
No one
was
talking
like,
about it anymore. You notice there hasn't been a
how long ago was that?
Was that a year?
Time is so strange now. It was more than a year ago, I think.
I didn't put this in the show notes, but we're talking about it. Our boy George R. R. Martin made another "I swear I'm working on it" thing.
He did. I didn't
the last
see it.
Couple days.
George.
I don't know. The boy who cried Dire Wolf, I think, is what with George R. R. Martin at this point.
Bonus points to Christy for the Sarah J. Maas.
Yes.
You nailed
and
that.
And thank
one.
You so much, Christy, for emailing in. And I'll say at least I'm magnanimous enough to take a public flagellation that someone else had one better idea than I did. That's the one I'll allow it.
We've noted it March 10th, 2022.
Inscribe it on something stone.
I'm going to get myself like a nice paperweight.
Yeah. Speaking of TikTok, interesting results from Barnes & Noble. This is in Publishers Weekly. Jim Milot doing the kind of year-end roundup, getting some quotes from James Daunt. Solid 2021. Sales in the first 8 months of 2021 were running 5-6% above 2019 levels. So really trying to get ahead of, you know, get outside the pandemic. Let's see the before times, what it looks like. Really fascinating quotes here. Backlist titles drove the overall sales increase, sparked by the impact of BookTok, according to Daunt. The success of Book Talk in getting young people interested in books is in keeping with the trend he has been seeing for years. Teenagers and young adults are the main drivers of book sales. I don't make money from old people. I make money from young people, he explained. Hmm. Wow. And then here's the quote. This is the money pull. When the school bell rings at 3:30, the stores get ready for invasion. Rebecca Shinsky, I'm going to clear the floor to you to react for good or for ill to that particular quotation.
When you told me about this earlier this week, I was like very tempted to go to the Barnes & Noble near my house that's central to several schools and just sit there at 3:30 and be like, are y'all here for the new Sarah J. Maas? Do you want some Colleen Hoover?
Are they still picking that up? Like,
I don't know. The first one's free, kid. Like, I'm fascinated by this. And it goes against the idea that it's the young people driving the book sales is contrary to the research from like the Pew Center about who's buying and reading books. So I think all of this comes with a parenthetical of like, this is what happens in Barnes & Noble, maybe not the book world writ large, but Book Talk seems to be infiltrating all of those corners. I actually think the most interesting thing about this, now that Barnes & Noble's got the numbers and they're talking about it and they can attribute it to the growth in these particular titles, is this is, I think, the first time that someone has had actual numbers that they seem willing to talk about, that we can attribute the appearance of a thing on social media to its increase in book sales. Like, for a long time, it was look at the things on Instagram, look at these celebrity book clubs. But there was the confounding factor of all of those titles were things that were getting a ton of publicity elsewhere. They were, you know, being marketed out the wazoo. So it was like, are they selling because they're on Instagram or Reese Witherspoon talked about them, or are they selling them because you're marketing the crap out of them? Maybe both. Yeah. But these the backlist titles are not getting marketing dollars behind them. Mm-hmm. It's just organic people picking them up and putting them on Book Talk. And this is the first time that we've really seen something like that. And it's fascinating.
I guess the thing that gives me pause is not the right word, but like, how you want to squint your eyes at look at this. So we're saying Book Talk is a huge phenomenon, something we've never seen like this before in book sales when it comes to, you know, basically it's word of mouth on steroids is how I think Danik and I talked about it. Because it's being amplified by machines and people looking at their phone, right? So it's getting amplified externally by these processes and these algorithms that want to show you more and more of the same thing, because you look at that thing, they think you're like other things, and it has its own recursive cycle. Even with all that, we're up 5% over 2019.
And yes, that's a really good point and question. And the thing that I'm really wondering is if you could scale up the purchasing from like the heyday of the Oprah Book Club when she was still on TV to current numbers and put them side by side, would this actually be bigger than Oprah going on TV and telling you to read the new Jonathan Franzen or the Wally Lamb novel or whatever?
Yeah, right.
Because the media landscape is so much more packed now.
Mm-hmm. It does feel like there's an interesting question about how much, is it the same amount of water? And like, this is a tide, so it's being pulled from other areas into the Book Talk kind of titles. 5 to 6% over 2 years, I mean, as you know, for anyone who knows, is not keeping up with inflation over the last 3 years. So we're actually running behind in inflation-adjusted dollars. Does that mean these books are being pulled from other things? Like, we've talked about this before, how top-heavy. There's a reason we can make Colleen Hoover and Sarah J. They're not even jokes. They're just acknowledgments. Like, if you just dip your toes in at all, you're going to get hit over the head with a bunch of things. And then people know they want to make videos about that because the algorithm likes it and has a self-fulfilling thing that's way different than anything we've seen before. Are those people then not buying something else that they were going to buy anyway? So it's less distributed. Or maybe it's probably a little bit, maybe there are actually more books being sold than if Book Talk doesn't exist. And the shape of those book sales is different.
And what this looks like in another 2 years when we are, I'm not going to like knock on all the wood and cross all of my fingers, out of the pandemic, like for real.
Yep.
I think is a really important question, because it's the increase in people having time to read, young people having time to read.
And that was explicitly mentioned here.
Yeah, and being glued to their phones and technology. Like, it's not surprising that TikTok got super popular over the last 2 years. It's more interesting that books are a thing that blew up there, but will it be sustaining? Are there Are there teenagers right now run into their Barnes & Noble to pick up a Sarah J. Maas book who otherwise were not going to be reading? Like, have we increased the pool of readers? Or are we just, as you were saying, moving the checkers around between the kids who are already readers and they're just all clumped on top of the Sarah J. Maas square and the Colleen Hoover square?
I would have to assume that the number of people seeing other people reading like this does mean there are a meaningful number of people that read a book that they wouldn't have otherwise because of seeing it somewhere. Mm-hmm. I think that's true. The question is how many of those people are, right? How is that, what part of that story is, because that's that's actually the most significant part if it's true, is how many people are being brought into the book buying realm that wouldn't be there other ways. The other one is kind of rearranging deck chairs.
Yeah.
That you're buying Sarah J. Maas versus any number of other fantasy or young adult or adult fiction or whatever, right? How much those would just have been replaced by something else? Because what Dante's also said is, especially we were talking about this in the holiday season, if they come in looking for one book, they'll just buy something else. He also gave us that quote. Yeah. So how are those two things in competition or in coordination with each other? I think we'll see. If we really did, if someone wanted to give us titles, and I saw Publishers Weekly do this earlier, and I didn't really like the methodology, but they looked at like the top 80, I guess, authors with the 80 largest TikTok followings, and then tried to map that onto sales using BookScan. And it seemed like they got more sales because of it. Well, there's a lot more than 80 titles. So, you know, how big of a thing is this? And is it enough where the 44-year-old suburban woman, who frankly, to this point, has been our number one reader and buyer of books. I assume that person still is the median, the most active median. That's a contradiction in terms, but you see what I'm saying.
Yeah.
How much has this moved the demo, right? Mm-hmm. I think is interesting and how durable it is, because you know what would be a sign of peak book talk for me is someone say like, oh, I don't know, James Daunt saying they're going to make their stores into TikTok. That to me is a way to jinx it. That tomorrow ByteDance is going to be like, you know what, this algorithm stuff.
Yeah, you know, we kind of have something to measure this against, because we do know that the last time there was a really huge word of mouth phenomenon, 50 Shades of Grey sold so many copies that every employee of Random House got a $5,000 bonus.
Right.
Every single employee. And we're not hearing those kinds of numbers about this. And that was certainly, 50 Shades of Grey was certainly an effect of people who, you know, didn't read or who otherwise would have read like one or two books that year were going and picking it up because it was so in the cultural water. Mm-hmm. We might be seeing a teenage version of that, that, you know, kids who don't typically read or who read minimally are picking this up so they can be in on the thing. But I want to see TikTok approach something like, with one title, approach something like what happened with 50 Shades of Grey, like true capital C, capital P cultural phenomenon, to feel like it's going to be worth talking about a whole lot. Because the thing that we also know, like, we've watched this happen now in almost 10 years of doing this show with, how do I get my books popular on Tumblr? How do I get my books popular on Instagram, Facebook, YouTube, Pinterest? Now it's TikTok. And by the time the wave has peaked, that, like, that's usually when the marketers are catching on to like, oh, is there a way we can do this? And then, as we say every single time, it's really hard to capture that kind of lightning in a bottle that's organic when you're doing a staged thing that's intended for marketing. Yeah. Certainly people make it work, and I'm sure there are interesting experiments to be done. But like, the fact, I kind of have the feeling of like, by the time the band gets reviewed in the town paper, that band is already over, you know, with like the kids that are in the scene. And it feels like by the time, like, now that there's a huge Publishers Weekly story that's like, Book Talk is doing all the things, Barnes & Noble's rearranging their stores, like, it might actually be almost over.
And it, even that, even Daunt's own commentary is a little contradictory, because he says the success of Book Talk in getting young people interested in books is in keeping with the trend he's been seeing for years. Teenagers and young adults are the main drivers of book sales. So that suggests that Book Talk is just part of a trend and not a epiphenomenon, which that runs counter to a lot of the understanding I think people have.
That's
of
a good
this
point.
Is difference in degree. This is different in kind, not in degree, right? Where maybe what's interesting is there is a kind of a raft of titles, you know, all the Colleen Hoovers, all the Maas, and there's some other, you know, especially romance seems to be having queer romance and queer stories, which is great. That's actually a really wonderful outcome. But it's not, I mean, to pick something we just talked about, it's not the Hunger Games, not in that kind of cultural awareness. It's not Harry Potter. It's not 50 Shades of Grey. And maybe I don't know if that's good or bad. It's just a looking a little bit different. But even now, like, what's probably the best-selling book of the last 3 years? Cumulative, Where the Crawdads Sing.
Yep.
That's not a cultural phenomenon, I don't think. That doesn't even rise to the level of the other thing. So I don't know what to say about that
either. Yeah, I don't either. You know, the tiny detail in this piece that I've glommed onto that I'm maybe reading too much into is they talked about having remodeled a bunch of Barnes & Noble stores to make them more friendly for selling books to teenagers around the TikTok idea. But Daunt acknowledges that the initial remodeling was mostly done by shifting your existing furniture around. And like, that is not a huge level of commitment or investment. Let's just put the chairs and tables in different places. Seems like we see that a thing might be happening. We can move our tables around and see if it makes a difference for these kids who like this TikTok thing. But I don't know, if you think a thing is really going to be big and durable, maybe you're ponying up for some new stuff for the kids. But
I don't even know what that would look like.
I don't either.
Yeah, I don't really know. With 2022 starting on the quiet side, Don said what the market could really use is a new breakout hit. Well, then what's the point of book talk?
You see, Jeff, you just get on TikTok and you talk about a book and then profit.
Yeah. The idea that, and he doesn't name check the ones we're name checking, which I think is interesting. Just the authors and titles by himself, and that a breakout hit is different. And that's kind of what I think you're saying about the 50 Shades of Grey. That looks like a breakout hit. From what Daunt is saying, that there's been a lot of sales according to BookTok, and people are coming in for a handful of different titles, maybe a dozen, maybe two dozen, three dozen, I don't know. But there hasn't been enough like juice to have one really spike and break through and really become a cultural moment that is about lining up at midnight when there's a new one out, or people are talking about it and your mom asks you and your friend read it, or your teenage daughter is going nuts for something, or your 6-year-old wants the new Wimpy Kid. Like, we just don't have one of those right now.
I remember talking about it on the show when 50 Shades of Grey was big, going to get my hair done and seeing like three other women in the salon reading 50 Shades of Grey on the same day.
Right.
And I that's a huge outlier. So it's an unfair expectation to set, but I would love to. I feel like I will believe that this is a really durable thing. Like, if I'm on vacation and there are 10 teenagers around the pool all reading whatever the current book talk thing is. Like, I did see that with The Girl with the Dragon Tattoo when that was big. I remember being on vacation. Like, everybody around the resort pool was reading that bright yellow mass market paperback.
This is why we need book scan. I really would love to look at Girl with the Dragon Tattoo 12 months versus Colleen Hoover, It Ends With Us, last 12 months.
Right.
Like, what are we talking about? Or what are the other ones? I don't know. So it continues to be fascinating. I think there's way more smoke here than we need to know that there's a significant fire burning. But how much of the forest has burnt? I don't know. Now I'm in real like dystopian climate change stuff. But like, how durable is this? Or is this going to run its course like everything else? And it's just the most, you know, spikiest example of technologically assisted word of mouth? Or is this a new paradigm in the end of history to some degree? I feel like that's hard to know. And I still think we're answering the question about all these kids that read Harry Potter. Did they grow up to be readers? What happened to all those kids?
Right. It's a great question.
It's 20 years ago.
Yeah. All those kids that were at the Harry Potter release parties.
Because this is what everyone says. We're making new readers. We're getting more people in. I just don't know how durable that stuff turns out to be. All the people that read 50 Shades of Grey, I don't know. Are those the ones picking up Sally Rooney and the Cloud Cuckoo Land now? Like, is that how it happens? Or how is it always thus and always thus shall be? I don't know.
I think maybe we could, if we wanted to like dive into some back data from Pew things, we could look at overall like percentages of the population that we're reading now and a decade ago and 15 years ago. But I'm thinking about the interview that I did. I can't remember the scholar's name now, but when I did an annotated episode about did technology kill reading? And the overview was basically no. Reading is about as popular as it's ever been. The kids are going to be all right. But if that's true, if it's like, be comforted, reading is not getting less popular. The other side of that coin is it's also not getting more popular.
And
I'm okay with that. I think that's all right. It would be interesting to have a cultural conversation, especially within publishing, about that, about like, are we, and what should we be trying to do? Should we be trying to convert new readers? Has that ever actually worked? Like, can you have a childhood hit with something like Harry Potter or The Hunger Games and actually retain that reader into the future of their life? Or should we be trying to, you know, upsell and go deeper with the existing readers and keep them in there? Like, should we be attracting new readers, or do we want to really focus on preventing reader attrition?
And how would you know it worked? I mean, that's the other thing. Right. Like, I'm kind of throwing shade at how huge Book Talk has been for Barnes & Noble. It's like we're up 5% over 2 years, even though inflation the last 2 years has been 9% or something like that total. Well, but I can't prove the opposite. Maybe it would be negative 7% without Book Talk. That's, it's also very possible, right? You can't know. It's very difficult to say. Anyway, so some data analysts out there, I guess you need a book scan account and
a lot
access
of questions
to the Chinese company's data, which
good
seems like a
that.
Tough beat, tough ask. All right, let's do another sponsor break.
This episode is brought to you by FX's The Veil, starring Elizabeth Moss. FX's The Veil is an international spy thriller that follows two women as they play a deadly game of truth and lies on the road from Istanbul to Paris and London. One woman has a secret, and the other has a mission to reveal it before thousands of lives are lost. FX's The Veil premieres April 30th, only on Hulu.
Your brain needs support, and new Ollie Brainy Chews are a delightful way to take care of your cognitive health. Made with scientifically backed ingredients like Thai ginger, L-theanine, and caffeine, Brainy Chews support healthy brain function and help you find your focus, stay chill, or get energized. Be kind to your mind and get these nootropic chews at Ollie.com. That's OLLY.com. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.
These are, does anybody care? Two stories in a row. No, I'm serious, Rebecca.
You're
I'm
right.
not making a joke.
You're right. No, no, I'm just laughing because it's very accurate and I didn't know where you were going with that segue.
Okay. The first is more clear to me personally that I do care about two new Cormac McCarthy books coming out. I do care about that. We've heard for a long time that there maybe was McCarthy stuff out there. I don't know the state of his personal health. We haven't heard anything from McCarthy land in a long time about, you know, what an appearance, an interview. I think even The Passenger, which is the movie that he wrote the screenplay for, might have been the last, you know, we had McCarthy out in public doing stuff. So I don't know if this is his state. He's actually writing something. He's still alive. What actually is going on here? So 16 years since The Road. That was the last McCarthy book. 16 years ago for The Road, by the way. Oh, my Lord. Wow. So both of these books sound, it wouldn't even matter to me to get a blurb. We got some blurbs about them. What do you think about, anything specific to say about these books, the McCarthy, where McCarthy is? I'm not sure what to say. At one point, I would have said 11 years ago, 14 years ago, we've got a game for a great American novelist, right? Morrison is still alive. We didn't mention McCarthy, I think, in our most recent, like, you know, we've got Jasmine Ward, we got Colson Whitehead. We kind of left McCarthy out because it'd been 12 years, and you got to stay in the game to be the champ.
Well, the first sentence here in this piece from The Times by Alexander Alter notes that it's a two-book deal McCarthy's got going here, and one of them is called The Passenger. It's a novel that explores... esoteric ideas about math, physics, and the nature of consciousness. So this fall, he's publishing The Passenger, and then also a second related novel called Stella Maris. And I just was not expecting the phrase esoteric ideas about math, physics, and the nature of consciousness to be next to Cormac McCarthy's name. So that's interesting to me. My relationship to McCarthy is, complicated. And this will be, I think Stella Maris is the title that has his first female protagonist. So like, thanks for getting around to it, Cormac. And also deals with mental health. And I feel concerned, like just concerned about...
How up on the discourse is our boy CM here?
Yes. How up on the discourse is Cormac McCarthy going to be with this? And also how up on the discourse and ready to... act that way about it, will his editors at Knopf be?
It's a good question. That's a really good question.
I think that's actually the part of this that I am most interested in. I think two kind of surprise Cormac McCarthy novels is a headline in and of itself. I am curious enough to want to read them, but also I feel like I'm kind of looking at it through my fingers. Like, this could go sideways in several ways.
It's almost a bigger, it's a higher stakes version of the old Franzen's got a new book coming out.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
You know, and we've heard even McCarthy's older from a different generation. Mm-hmm. He's certainly less plugged in than Franzen appears to be, even with Franzen's, you know, I think now warranted skepticism of social media that we've seen over time. But he's still thinking about things and writing essays and like thinking in public and paying attention to what's going on. I'm guessing McCarthy, you know, is not up on you know what I'm saying.
I don't think that's what he's doing.
I don't think that's what he's doing.
Right. And like, Franzen is coming from, he gets a few things wrong, but he's coming from a fundamentally like feminist attempting to be inclusive perspective. And I think he's more aware of what the possible pitfalls are or the limitations of his perspective. McCarthy, those feel like big open questions, and the stakes for that, for like his legacy, are much higher now, because if he didn't do this, and The Road in 2006 is the end of his career, that is a very defined legacy from a pretty particular era of fiction. That was a pretty long era of fiction, where you could tell stories that were about certain types of men with certain types of perspectives, and that was the thing that you did to be taken seriously.
White dudes running away from other white dudes. I mean, that's kind of what a lot of the Cormac McCarthy is dealing with.
Right. And this sort of stylized violence in a way that I don't know how interesting these will actually be for readers in 2022 if he hasn't updated his priors.
It's also very true that late end of life novels tend not of canonical writers. I'm putting McCarthy in there. I'm not ashamed for it. I think that's fair at this point. Mm-hmm. You know, very rarely do you like, oh yeah, here's the novel at the end that was definitive. Struggling to think of one, because the thing that they came up with in their younger life is the thing that was most interesting. It was reacting more immediately to the artistic world around them. And it's hard to stay current with that. I mean, even, you know, Morrison, After Paradise, it's a mixed bag. I mean, still really interesting stuff, but After Paradise, you're not picking anything for her personal pantheon at that particular moment. And you're right. We didn't need another McCarthy after All the Pretty Horses, Blood Meridian, No Country for Old Men, The Road. It's a pretty good run for that period of time. I will definitely be interested in one of these. I'll probably read them both, to be honest, as a completionist and someone who I think you're onto something, which his legacy is much more up for grabs than I would have thought of right when The Road came out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. In the Stella Maris, it says he inhabits the shattered psyche of Alicia Western, a math prodigy whose intellect frightens people and whose hallucinations appear as characters with their own distinct voices. And it's like, how did he do the research for this? Who did he talk to?
He has been very, there was some magazine, was it Nautilus? There was some, he was involved in some like science and math organization for a while. Like, this has been a durable interest. Now, that's not to say he's going to do well with it, but I do remember that he was interested in things that didn't seem like he would be interested in, knowing that he wrote books about people on horses running away from other people on horses.
I'm glad he contains multitudes. Yes. I will remain concerned about his presentation of women and characters mental with health. Mental illness. I'll wait. Honestly, I'm going to wait for you to read these and be like, okay, yes or no.
Right. Because I am up on the discourse, is what you're saying. And then I should be the arbiter of that.
I think in our little universe of two here, you're up enough on the discourse to tell me if I'm going to hate it or not.
That's very kind of you to say. The editor, Pamela Paul, stepping down as editor of the New York Times Book Review. Boy, in the 70s, this would have been like, this would be a huge deal, changing of the guard. New York Times Book Review, they do a lot more book coverage these days. I'm not even interested in speculating about who's going to replace her at this point. I think when the last editor, which I can't remember, which is telling at this point, We thought, you know, who could it be here? So my question to you, is there anyone they could name that's not just like a shock? I mean, okay, let's not do that. You know, Howard Stern. We're not going to, right?
Howard Stern editing the New York Times Book Review is actually
within the realm of plausibility. Is there anyone that would even make you bat your eyes in interest at paying attention to what they do? One name.
Okay. Roxane Gay, maybe?
That's my name. She seems to be interested in this world, right? Outside of just focusing on books. She's doing podcasts. She writes a lot. She's written for The Times several times. Famously, my memory was when she started writing about her KitchenAid mixer for the wire cutter as part of the New York Times. She would be interested in mixing up coverage, which I think, frankly, the New York Times has done a better job of late, for sure. I think there's still work to be done, but I'm not sure it's the next most impactful thing the Times could work on. I'm not even sure what that would be at this point.
Yeah, I think, you know, you're right. The coverage at the Times is a lot more diverse and interesting than it was. And Pamela Paul did a lot of that, brought in coverage of a bunch of genres. Yes, she did. She really expanded the way that the New York Times thinks about books and reading and coverage of books, and especially genres that aren't literary fiction. And that's been very heartening to see. I think it would be interesting to see what Roxane Gay would do with this. I don't think it would be the best use of Roxane Gay's time and talents to go edit the New York Times Book Review.
The who says no question is fascinating with this point anymore. Anyone we'd be interested in maybe shouldn't do it.
I think that's right.
Go, do what you're doing. I'm sure there's up and coming critics and editors at magazines and outlets and journals that we don't pay attention to or see very briefly that would be fascinating to see. But this is a management gig. I think what I've seen Pamela Paul do late, she's written a couple of books, she's edited some stuff, she's going to stay on as an opinion columnist. This is not you want to get your own voice into the world kind of a gig. You are a coach, right? Assembler, manager of voices, and you know, it's an Herculean undertaking to get this many words out of fancy writers about books in this particular way. But I think a thankless, increasingly thankless job, whatever vocational awe that used to be associated with this gig, is a shadow of what it once was.
Yeah, that's right.
So there's not as much payoff to the slog of making the donuts at the New York Times Book Review anymore. I'm trying to think of the last time, I'm sure I do, that I actually read a review. I read a lot of the Times coverage of books. And I think that's one thing that's Alexandra Alter, and they've hired some other, I don't know if you'd even call them beat reporters, but they cover books in the publishing industry in a way that I don't remember them covering it in the past. And that could be that I was just younger and, well, I certainly was younger because that's how time works, but like that I was just seeing things through a different eye, and maybe it's largely been the same, but my appreciation for it has changed. I find that coverage to be more indispensable than the 1,000-word review about the six Midlist novels that I used to read when I was 22, 23.
Yeah,
or something.
I agree.
All right. Anything else on that? Let's do one more break and maybe a quick front list corner before we get out of here. All right. I have a Uber adjacent front list corner to talk about. I don't think I've told you about this book. It's called The Voltage Effect. It's a business book, and it's I think it's written to be picked up by people who want to read business books. It has all the hallmarks of the business books. It has like a title that's meant to be catchy, Voltage Effect TM, right? One of those things. It's about scale. It has the cover design. It's a combination of case studies and anecdotes and barely disguised bespoke taxonomy that goes into all of these kinds of books. And I liked it. It's about scaling, why some ideas are easier to make bigger than other ideas. But was most interesting to me that the fellow who wrote it, name is List, John List, was the chief data officer for a little company called Uber.
Oh.
Got hired by Kalanick and then left to go to Lyft. And you get a few little anecdotes behind the scenes. Also,
that's beautiful.
One of the great data collection stories, right? Because it's on your app. You're on your app and you're telling stuff, and there's data on the driver's side and on the writer's side, and the kinds of experiments they did and the kind of arguments you had. But you get some Kalanick stories that are really interesting. But I don't think I'd read a book by one of like the sort of the quants behind these VC startups before. And it's not that's in the background. Like, he's using that as some of the evidence, but it's not like a memoir of like my mm-hmm. days at Uber or Lyft. It's like, he's using, you know, stuff we know and behavioral psychology and some of the things that go on. So it's doesn't break a lot of new ground for me in that respect. I thought it was good. I'm glad I read it. But the thing is, this is someone who's been at the highest levels of the trenches. That's a show title of the data warfare mm-hmm. that's happened with startups in VC in Silicon Valley over the last 10 years. So, that was my day. That was my little nugget for you this week.
That's a good nugget.
You've been doing Efron, and I'm jealous because it's not out yet. Give me 2 minutes on Efron to get me ready.
Oh yes. Okay. I'm listening to Left on 10th. It's, as you're saying, the new memoir by Delia Efron, who was Nora's sister. And it is about early in the book, it opens, which I did not know because I didn't read a synopsis. I like to go into these things cold. So I found out driving around by surprise that this book opens with the death of her husband of 30 years. Which was a rough moment for me, but it's beautiful. And she writes about him and their relationship and her just kind of approach to life and love, and then moves on to telling us about a year after his death. She gets an email after publishing a piece in the New York Times from a man that she apparently went on dates with in her 20s and does not remember, but he remembers her. His wife is also recently deceased, and he's reaching out to be like, hey, I saw your thing in the Times. I remember you fondly. Maybe you want to strike up a correspondence? And it feels cool to her. So she begins emailing him, and like very quickly, they just sort of fall for each other by email. And then they start having like 4 hour long phone calls. And I'm only about a third of the way through the book, but it's becoming this really beautiful story about an unexpected late in life love and what it's like to be in your 70s, feeling like you're 14. And just
nice bookend to heartbreak, sounds like, actually.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you know what it actually is? Yeah. It is. It is a really interesting twin to heartbreak. It is lovely. She's lovely reading it. She reads their emails from the early days into that chapter on audio, because, of course, you know, we all have our email archives now. And it's just so charming. I would love her to just narrate her life for me for a while. But I think, you know, older women are chronically underrepresented in media and culture. Love stories that are affirming and mm-hmm. not making some joke of older people in general are really, really lacking. And this is just wonderful and lovely. And I hope someone will make a movie of it.
I'm really looking forward to that. I'm going to do it on audio when it comes out in April. Yes. Speaking of people you just want to narrate things. So I think we may have talked about not picking it in the winter preview draft, but there's a special mm-hmm. edition of Recitative by Toni Morrison, her one and only short story, Random House. I think it's a Random House title. It might be cut off. I can't remember. Put out a slim volume that's just the short story. Maybe a shameless money grab, but I don't care because it's been
no,
available.
They can have it. It's fine.
It's fine. It's Toni. But the thing I really, well, I have to have my Morrison. So there's a Morrison. I need to have that on my shelf. But it's a short story, but it's a very slim volume, but half the volume is Zadie Smith's intro to the short story. And she writes about the short story, but also about Morrison. And I wanted it for that. And it's really great. And I don't want to just go read Recitative. Zadie will say anything okay. more that I could possibly say about it. But I think I might rebuy it because I want to hear Zadie read it. Because she might be my favorite narrator yes. based on one experience that I'm like,
she's
while
wonderful.
I was reading this, I'm glad I had this, but I was like having, I don't know, medium remorse. Like, we need a new book term for this of like, wait a minute, shouldn't I be doing this on audio? But then I don't have it on my shelf and they're going to get me twice, Rebecca Shinsky. And I'm not sure I feel some kind of way about it.
I think hearing you talk about it, they're going to get me twice too, because what I want to do is listen to Zadie Smith's introduction and then read the short story in print.
Though I actually am not 1,000% sure there's an audio version. I guess I would be surprised, but it might make sense if there weren't one. Maybe I'll look on Libby. Maybe I can put on hold for Libby and I'll get around to experiencing it that way. But it's a wonderful introduction. I know this is going
to
come as a shock.
I'm so glad
Zadie
to hear
writing about Toni is really cool. News at 11. But that came out in January, and I've had it on my list because I didn't really have much to say about it, but I want to get it in here before we get too much farther
Great.
Into the spring. That's our show, bookriot.com/listen to get show notes, to links and all back episodes of the Book Riot podcast. You can email us, podcast@bookriot.com, especially if you've got something that would beat a corn of thorns and roses. That's not right. A quart of roses and thorns, the moss. So I should say, do not include that one, or as I would like to say, no moss. for the rest of you out there. But any other contenders is fine. Rebecca, we'll talk to you next time.
Have a good one.